Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Steve Bannon, no longer in the White House, but perhaps more powerful out. These days, the former White House chief strategist and Breitbart editor is talking revolution, dismantling the GOP establishment, bringing in leaders who support his populist economic nationalism. And he's been talking about all that with big liberal thinker Robert Kuttner, outlining his ideas for the future, maybe looking for some buy-in. This hour on Point, Robert Kuttner on Bannon's grand plans for the Republican Party and the country. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. How do you see Steve Bannon and his plans now? We're at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Let's think back for just a second. Just a couple of weeks ago, Bannon was in Alabama rallying support for Roy Moore in the primary race there against Donald Trump's guy, Luther Strange. Here he was. This was on Fox's Sean Hannity during that time rallying support, saying the GOP establishment considers him a dangerous outsider, and he's coming after them. Here was Bannon.
The elites represented by Mitch McConnell, right, hold me in contempt, right? They think I'm a bad guy. They think I'm a dangerous guy. I wear their contempt as a badge of honor. Okay, they have helped destroy this country. They have done nothing but allow economic hate crimes against the working men and women in the heartland of this country.
This guy knows how to throw bombs, and here he was addressing a crowd in Montgomery, Alabama, the night of Roy Moore's primary victory. He's got a plan here, pushing for more challenges to the GOP establishment across the country.
As you all remember, last night we talked about starting a revolution with Judge Moore's victory. Well, Senator Corker stepped down today. He's not going to run for re-election. And you're going to see in state after state after state, people that follow the model of Judge Moore, that do not need to raise money from the elites, from the crony capitalists, from the fat cats in Washington, D.C., New York City, Silicon Valley.
And here he was once more, Steve Bannon with Sean Hannity last night, saying it's 100% accurate to say that he's declaring war on Republican incumbents.
We are declaring war on the Republican establishment that does not back the agenda that Donald Trump ran on and the President of the United States.
We'll see whose agenda he's really talking about. Bob Kuttner is with us, co-founder and co-editor of The American Prospect, professor at Brandeis University's Heller School for Social Policy and Management. He sat down for a second time last Thursday with Steve Bannon in Washington at the Breitbart townhouse there. His story in The American Prospect is headlined Steve Bannon Unleashed. He's also calling for Barack Obama to get back into the fray to oppose Donald Trump. We'll talk about that later in the hour. Robert Kuttner, welcome to On Point.
Always happy to be here, Tom.
You in August, you talked with Steve Bannon, and people were kind of stunned. He had been pretty radio silent at that time. The fact that he would come out to you with some pretty hot statements about how war with North Korea was total nonsense, that his number one priority was economic war with China, called the alt-right white nationalist clowns in his interview with you. People were stunned that he was talking with a liberal guy, a progressive like you. Why was he talking with you then? Why was he talking with you last week?
Well, two things. First of all, the day before, his assistant got in touch with me and invited me to the White House, actually.
We talking August now
August,
or last
yeah.
week?
August. Yeah, okay. August. I had written a column saying that the United States is being taken to the cleaners by China, that China has a mercantilist strategy where they make deals with American companies where they subsidize your factory. They give you cheap labor. You transfer your technology. You take on a Chinese partner. And you are not allowed to produce for the Chinese domestic market. You're only allowed to produce for export. And the American companies take these deals because Uncle Sam is not sticking up for them. Yep. And then I think with Korea, rather than restraining Korea, I think the Beijing government lets Korea do just enough mischief so that we need Beijing to keep them on a leash, which then undercuts our ability to take a hard line with them on trade. So I wrote this column, and then the next day Bannon's assistant sends me an email saying, Mr. Bannon was intrigued by your column, wants to invite you to the White House to come talk about it. And Bannon actually shares much of that view of China, as he's made clear. And I said, look, I'm in the Berkshires. I'm on vacation with my family. I'd be happy to come after Labor Day. Yeah, I said to myself, if he's still there, but why don't we talk on the phone in the meantime? So Bannon took the bait, and I recorded the call. And he said some crazy things. He said some – not crazy. He said some incautious things. He said some things that you really wouldn't say unless you wanted to get fired if you knew you were speaking on the record. And there's some ambiguity about whether he just forgot to say we're off the record or whether this was his way of sending a signal. He changed his story on that a couple of times. I mean, after that story ran the next day – I got a phone call from Sarah Huckabee Sanders at the White House, who I've never spoken with before.
Yes, okay.
And she said, Mr. Bannon is very upset. And I said, well, I hope so. And she said, well, he thought you were off the record. I said, well, he should have said so. And she said, well, he thinks he did. I said, well, I have the recording and he didn't. So that was that.
So you played it by the book and he didn't say it. And there it was and it was on the record. And shortly thereafter, he was out of the White House.
Well, but the next day he changed his tune and said, well, actually, I deliberately meant to say all of that. And then on day two of this affair, he gets fired. So you asked the question, why in the world would he want to talk to me again? I helped get him fired. And I sent him a text saying, hey, maybe I did you a favor. You seem to be having more fun out than in. You want to talk? He said, sure, you know, come on by the townhouse. And so
– this is last week now.
This is last week.
And he certainly does feel not so much fired as unbound these days.
Precisely. And I think as long as he was at the White House, he was subject to a certain amount of discipline because he's the president's strategist. And now I think he's freed to do a lot more damage. And the intriguing question is damage to whom? And so needless to say, when I walked up the steps of the Breitbart townhouse, the first question was, well, are we on the record or off the record? He said, no, let's do this on background. I said, but can I convey the essence of your views? Yes. And
in other words, you can't quote him.
Right.
We'll know who's saying it. We'll know who – and you give us the idea.
And then I said, well – can my readers know that we talked? He said, oh, sure. Yeah. So at that point, he explained, which he subsequently put on the record, his design to run candidates against every incumbent Republican senator except Ted Cruz. And
every Republican incumbent senator in the country who's up for re-election.
Yeah. And,
okay, except Cruz.
And to try and get them to be his kind of economic nationalist. We can talk more about what that means.
Yes.
The problem is it's almost a non-category. You have social conservatives, far-right conservatives like Judge Moore, who are not economic nationalists. The Republican recipe since Reagan has been to marry social conservatism to Wall Street.
Right.
That's a recipe that works very nicely for Republicans. And even if he can find the odd Republican who can somehow combine – God, guns, gays, racism, with economic nationalism.
Anti-gay rights, pro-gun, God of the center, and all the rest.
And the racism. I mean, let's not leave out the racism because racializing economic grievances is at the absolute center of what Bannon and Trump are trying to do. With Trump, it's more of a dog whistle. With Bannon, it's actually audible to the human ear. All of the anti-immigrant stuff is about demonizing the other. And there just aren't enough Republican politicians who take that basket of ideas and marry it to let's have progressive taxes, let's have a lot of public infrastructure, let's get tough with China.
All of which Bannon does endorse.
Yes, and he may be a category of one. Because that's just not what Republicans
well,
do.
Well, not one because he's coming up – well, he's trying to anyway with primary challengers for these sitting Republican senators.
Yes, and he may be able to get to the right of people like Floyd Flake in Arizona or Dean,
Jeff Flake.
Thinking of the New York congressman Floyd Flake. Yeah, Jeff Flake in Arizona or Dean Heller in Nevada, people who've criticized Trump. He may be able to get candidates who are to their right on loyalty to Trump, on social issues, but I will be amazed if he can find people who are to their right on social issues who also sound like me on economic nationalism. It's just it's like a unicorn. It's not a category.
What's fascinating is that you as a progressive might have a very compatible conversation with Steve Bannon on some aspects of his economic nationalism. And I want to look at where there's overlap and where there's not. But stepping back, he really is talking about blowing up the GOP or reshaping it in a radical way. What is that way? What's his vision? Whether or not he can achieve it?
Well, and I wish him well. I hope he succeeds.
Well,
no, his vision is to turn, and he said this in so many words, he said, I want to turn the Republican Party into a workers' party. And so he obviously means a white workers' party. But if he could pull that off, that would be formidable. You know, he when I interviewed him on the record last time,
yeah.
This is the important quote. He's speaking of the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I want them to talk about racism every day. If the left is focused on race and identity and we go with economic nationalism, we can crush the Democrats. And he might even be right. Now, obviously, there's a very complicated conversation here about how much of what's going on is class and how much of what's going on is race. We at The Prospect did a whole cluster of articles on this, and it's both. A lot of the backlash—
You mean the appeal that the Trump camp is making.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. A lot of the backlash is about white working class people, especially white working class men, but a lot of women. I mean, Hillary did not carry working class women. She did not carry white women at all. She lost white women by 7 points. So a lot of this is about white people feeling that America used to be great and it's not great anymore. But a lot of this is about black people feeling that the economy has passed them by even more than white people feel that way. And so there is a common politics of class uplift waiting to be had. But at the same time, you can't not talk about race. Racism is its own thing. And that's why this is challenging for the Democrats as well as challenging for the Republicans.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Steve Bannon's grand plan to blow up the Republican Party, Bannon's economic nationalism, and whether it connects somewhere, somehow, in some degree, with the progressive agenda. My guest is Robert Kuttner, co-founder, co-editor of The American Prospect, bona fide progressive liberal who has now had two very interesting conversations with Steve Bannon, one when he was still in the White House. He was soon thereafter out. Just last week, again, at the Breitbart townhouse in Washington, the kind of command central for the Breitbart realm, Steve Bannon is now right back in the midst of, and he's saying he's going to put primary challengers up against Republican senators all over the country. He did that in Alabama, Judge Roy Moore, against Donald Trump's guy, Luther Strange, and Bannon's guy won. Robert Kuttner's been talking about all of this with him. You can join the conversation this hour. How do you see Bannon now? Republicans, are you ready for the Bannon makeover? Democrats, progressive, are you sneaking peeks at Steve Bannon's economic platform, wondering if it's your flavor? Does his handling of racism, make him a no-go for you? What's your question for Robert Kuttner, who's having this bro moment with Steve Bannon? Bannon slashing on Republican leadership, certainly in Congress. Here he was bashing Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell at a rally in Fairhope, Alabama, the night before the Senate primary race where his guy, Bannon's guy, beat Trump's guy, September 25th.
Mitch McConnell in this permanent political class is the most corrupt an incompetent group of individuals in this country.
And he went on talking about the Republican leadership to the crowd in Alabama.
They think you're a pack of morons. They think you're nothing but rubes. They have no interest at all in what you have to say, what you have to think, or what you want to do. And tomorrow, you're going to get an opportunity to tell them what you think of the elites that run this country.
And his guy won. And he's serious about doing it again. Here he was on Fox News last night saying this is no joke. He's really going after these Republican incumbents.
We're spending a ton of time with the grassroots organizations to make sure that these candidates are fully vetted. You're going to see people announced this week that are going to have experience in government. You're going to see some outsiders that are authentic, and these people are real. It's not like 2010. 2010 was the beginning of the Tea Party when things were first getting going.
Robert Cuttner, all right, can we define terms a little bit and step back a little bit? What is the Steve Bannon vision? What does he want in this country that he thinks we don't have now?
Well, he has succeeded with Trump in racializing economic grievance for white people. So his idea, which is not Trump's idea, he's at odds with Trump's on this.
on the racialization?
No, on economic nationalism.
Okay, so economic nationalism, define that.
Well, I have one version of it. He has a rather different version of it. I think at the end of the day, his version of it is a phony. But his notion is, hey, if we can actually deliver some good jobs for ordinary working people, if we can take back some manufacturing from China, mm-hmm. if we can play hardball with China, if we can have an infrastructure program, then we are not only appealing to white people at the level of rhetoric and slogan and racism, but we're actually delivering something tangible to them. Here's the problem with that if you unpack it. It would require a fundamental rupture with Wall Street.
Why?
Well, first of all, Wall Street likes the kind of tax program that's going through Congress. Wall Street is not in favor of raising taxes on the rich.
Steve Bannon wants to?
Steve Bannon says he wants to. Secondly,
Why? To pay down the debt? To build up an infrastructure? To why?
To cut taxes for regular working people and to have money for infrastructure.
Okay.
But he's also against the state. This whole thing about the deep state, the administrative state.
Mm-hmm. The state is in the government.
Mm-hmm. That's Bannon. Well, how do you have an infrastructure program without the government? You know, you look at mm-hmm. World War II. World mm-hmm. War II was the greatest public works program in the history of the country. Mm. It put everybody back to work. The government brought us.
They took over the economy during
took over the economy. So if you had a real infrastructure program of several trillion dollars, that's big government. That's big government doing what it does well. Trump, meanwhile, wants to privatize FDR's crown jewels. He wants to privatize mm-hmm. the great dams of the mm-hmm. Northwest. He wants to privatize – you had a segment on public power. He wants to privatize public power. Mm-hmm. I don't think Bannon can find enough Republicans – I'm not even sure he believes it – who are willing to empower government to have a major infrastructure program mm-hmm. that would really create a lot of good jobs. I don't think he can find enough Republicans who want to get tough with China. Why? Because Wall Street profits from all of these deals. Wall Street likes the status quo just fine. So my version of economic nationalism
yep.
is you have trade deals that are not deregulation deals in disguise. You have labor standards in trade deals.
And this is your progressive vision of
yep.
economic
yep.
okay.
You have a lot of public infrastructure. Don't forget, Trump's version of infrastructure spending is the private equity guys get rich floating a lot of bonds mm-hmm. and you sell off the Indiana Tollway mm-hmm. and the middleman who buys it gets rich collecting tolls. And as Donald Trump would say, it's fake. So I think Bannon believes this. I mean, the thing about Bannon is
– believes what?
His own blarney. Mm-hmm. He really believes he's an economic nationalist. And there's a lot of swagger, a lot of narcissism, a lot of bombast. But when you actually look at what he's proposing, either he's not in favor of the real deal or to the extent that he is, he's not going to find enough Republicans. Judge Moore. Judge Moore doesn't buy any of this. He's a traditional far-right social conservative. Bannon admitted as much to me when I talked to him. Judge Moore doesn't know about economic nationalism, but somehow – see, Bannon is part strategic genius and part delusional.
I mean, you said he was so cranked when you met him at the Breitbart townhouse there. It's caffeine or his own blarney or something stronger.
I have no idea. I suspect he's one of these self-caffeinating people who's just adrenalized all the time. Mm-hmm. And so he looks at me and he sees somebody who might be partly a kindred soul. But then half the conversation was him sort of teasing me that, hey, if the Democrats ever got this right, they could clean our clock. But they're so messed up, they're never going to. And I'm going to beat you guys.
Why does he hate Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan and everybody so much? I mean, maybe it's part and parcel of what you've just described.
Because Mitch McConnell is the right winger, is a right winger who is the opposite of a populist. He doesn't have a populist bone in his body. And I think he views that McConnell and company push Trump in the direction of being a more conventional right-wing politician, whereas Trump would like to – I mean, Bannon would like to have Trump operate in Bannon's own image. And you may have had Josh Green on this program. I mean, Green's book is terrific. It was all about how Bannon coached Trump to be this kind of strategic white nationalist. But he's very upset with Trump. And I have one more important point to make for not buying the economic nationalist part of his package. And the other game that Bannon is
playing. So on the outside, he says, I'm doing this to defend Donald Trump's vision. But he's actually levering Donald Trump, trying to push him toward his vision.
He's trying to jam Trump. And what he is also trying to do is, on the one hand, he's pushing Trump. He's making fun of Trump. He was making fun of Trump when Moore beat Trump's guy. On the other hand, he is ingratiating himself with Trump. So you saw yesterday, he attacks Corker for having the temerity to criticize Trump. Well, guess what? Republican senators get to criticize their president. But this is his way. Reinhold Niebuhr had a great phrase, cheap grace. This is cheap grace. This is a cheap way of ingratiating himself with Trump. So he bashes Corker for having criticized Trump. And they talk. That's the other sense I got from
Bannon and Trump talk?
They still talk.
Here was Bannon last night. This is in response to Tennessee Senator Bob Corker calling the White House an adult daycare center, saying that President Trump is acting like he's on The Apprentice. Bannon on Sean Hannity's Fox News show last night said this.
If Bob Corker has any honor, any decency, he should resign immediately. He should not let those words stand.
Self-caffeinating man, says Robert Kuttner. He was in the townhouse that Breitbart runs its operations out of in Washington with Bannon just last week. Let's go to our listeners, Jane in Haddam, Connecticut. Jane, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you, Tom. I'm absolutely, I've been beside myself since October about what's happened and that Trump is actually our president, is I'm out of my mind about it. But then we're all talking about this guy Bannon, who is a racist, un-American kook, and everybody, all the intellectuals are analyzing him and this and that and looking at what everybody's doing. Obviously, the middle class is being used. Obviously, unfortunately, we're a racist country. I have a retail shop in Connecticut. I hear it every day. I do American-made. People don't want American-made. They want the cheapest price. So all of that is just ridiculous. But what I'm really concerned about and what I'm so frightened about is that the Democratic Party, my party, they are not leading. There's no mission statement. I love listening to all the intellectuals and reading the books, but we have got to come up with something, because these people cannot be in the government. They are crazy. You talked about the environment. I mean, we've got storms, fires, and guess what? The middle class pays for all of that. And if the environment continues to get worse, it just continues. But they're all, you know, the Republican, the followers, the supporters, they believe everything they're being told. I've talked to people. I've lost friendships. But the Democrats, we have got to figure something out. Stop always reacting.
Jane, we've got it. We've got it. And loud and clear, but you say these people cannot be in government. They are in government. I mean, Donald Trump is in the White House. Steve Bannon's on the outside now, but I've got exactly where you're headed. I want to come back to what the Democrats may need to do here. One more, and I'll come to you, Bob. Tim, thank you, Jane. Tim in Nashville. Tim, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I've heard Steve Bannon himself repeatedly say that he wants the Democrats to be focused on race. And in my mind, that provides all the context we need for Trump's tweets on the NFL and his tweets on Charlottesville. Things that seem inexplicable are things that provoked the Democrats to respond and be completely focused on race. So Mike Pence attending the NFL game on Sunday and walking out, that's another instance of this administration focusing on dividing Americans on race. That's all. Thank you.
It is not hard to see it just that way, Tim, and I appreciate your call as well. I mean, after when you talked with him in August, with Steve Bannon in August, Bob Kuttner, and this was not this was just a little while after the Charlottesville nightmare, and he attacked the alt-right. And he said, talking with you, they're a bunch of clowns.
Well, pardon me for a slightly risque metaphor, but he reminds me of a guy who'll say anything to a woman to get her to go to bed with him. So,
Meaning
when he was talking with me, he was trying to persuade me that, oh, I'm not such a bad guy. I don't really take those alt-right guys seriously. They're a bunch of clowns. Well, that's nonsense. Of course he takes them seriously. They're his shock troops. I want to come back to something Tim said because it was exactly right. Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff that looks like random racist garbage turns out to be very, very strategic. And what all of these episodes and tweets have in common is an effort to get Democrats and progressives to talk obsessively about race. Now, progressives do need to talk about race, but they can't just talk about race. And that's why I think your other caller had a real point. There needs to be a strategic, coherent vision that actually delivers tangible benefits to regular people, or Bannon and Trump can prevail.
We're talking about Steve Bannon. Robert Kuttner's been talking with him. Anthony in Philadelphia. Thank you for calling, Anthony. You're on the air with Bob Kuttner.
Hi.
What do you see, Anthony?
Earlier in the program, your guest said that what Bannon wants to make the Republican Party into is a white party or a workers' party.
A white workers' party, I think.
A white workers' party. So this was the model of National Socialism in Germany. The Nazi Party in Germany was a workers' party. It was a workers' party. It was a party of working and middle-class Germans who were anxious and concerned about what was going on in the economy because of the Great Depression. They were also worried about kind of cultural changes that were happening in Germany in the 1920s, a greater sexual liberalism and freedom, for instance. Mm-hmm. And furthermore, Bannon's problems with Wall Street and with the banks, while there are serious problems there for sure, I think that he has said this, that part of that his problem with the banks and with Wall Street is that they're run by Jews. He's a fascist, is what I'm saying. And you seem to be you're beating around this point, but you're not addressing it directly. His model is Nazi National Socialism.
Bob Kuttner. Thank you, Anthony. Bob?
I just wrote a book on this. It'll be out next year. It's called Can Democracy Survive Global Capitalism? And in that book, I point out that there are some parallels with fascism. There's one big difference. When Hitler became chancellor in 1933, mm-hmm. Germany had been a very fragile democracy for about a decade and a half. Mm-hmm. Before that, it was part monarchy, part semi-democracy. Mm-hmm. And the Western Allies did everything they could to make Weimar fail through the reparations efforts.
Between World War I and II,
yes.
Or the 30s. Mm-hmm.
So if you look at the United States of America right now, even though democracy is being pummeled, democracy's holding. Separation of powers is holding. Trump can't get a lot of his program through Congress.
Don't worry, be happy. Is that where you're headed?
Not at all. But there is more resilience to American democracy. I do think we will have an election in 2018. Hitler canceled all future elections. He not only revved up his brown shirts, but he killed the people who opposed him, and there was no civil society whatsoever. So,
what would Steve Bannon say? You've been talking to him. If he heard Anthony saying, "Dude, this is a Nazi agenda, a National Socialist agenda that you're putting on the table," what would Steve Bannon say?
I can't imagine what Steve Bannon would say. I mean, I'm sure he would say, "Tut tut,
fire
that's a
up.
Lot of nonsense." Mm-hmm. But so I think there are parallels. There's no doubt about that. I think one has to be a little bit careful in not overdoing the parallels. Mm-hmm. In fact, I had an argument with my editor about whether to use the word neo-fascist. And I ended up using it but qualifying it and pointing out some of the very important differences, the most important of which is this is still a democracy if we will seize the moment.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking about Steve Bannon's grand plan to blow up the Republican Party, Bannon's economic nationalism, whether it might connect somewhere with the progressive agenda. Robert Kuttner is big on the progressive agenda. He's co-editor and co-founder of the American Prospect. He has talked now with Steve Bannon a couple of times, most recently just last Thursday. Why did Steve Bannon leave the White House? Here he was on September 25th telling Fox News why.
President Trump needs help. It's the reason I left the White House. Yeah. I told him I was going to go after the establishment. Go after the establishment first and the Democrats next. Look.
He's talking the Republican establishment first, then the Democrats. We've got to look at this. We're going to also talk about Bob Kuttner's call for Barack Obama to come off the bench out of the sort of post-presidency Mount Olympus and get back in the game to directly confront Donald Trump in this new political environment. Robert Kuttner is with us. I'll come to your calls. We've got good callers here. Lots of comment online as well, though, Bob. And let me share some of this with you. First, this is from our website. Fun Girl says, someone has to steer President Trump back on course. Bannon will do that. Build the wall, enforce immigration laws, keep wacky Muslims out. Sorry, Muslims. Her words, not mine. Reduce regulation. Grow the economy. These are the things that U.S. citizens, Trump voters want. So Steve Bannon, go, you know, put the bumper rails on Trump and go. But then we've got others. Thinking writes, Steve Bannon is a heart attack waiting to happen. Really creepy how he pretends he's not a white supremacist. He has been revealed. Bear writes to us, all they need is a couple of senators and there goes the country. We already have a minority running the government as it is through the Electoral College parlor trick. Bannon, this listener writes, is an enemy of the state. And then Finance Phil writes to you, addressing you, Bob. Why would a liberal carry water for this racist thug? 45 got millions in free media coverage, i.e. Trump. Why are we falling into this trap again?
Well, I am not carrying water from him. I think I helped get him fired. But I think it's really interesting to know your enemy, and it's really interesting to sit down and try and figure out what makes this guy tick. And look, he will manage to bump off a few incumbent Republicans. But if he gets them to embrace a program of progressive economic populism a la Roosevelt, serious public works, labor standards in trade, progressive tax reform so that rich people pay more and regular people pay less, I'll eat my shirt. He's just not going to find Republicans to embrace that program. So what he is calling economic nationalism, if you bother to drill down, is mostly fake. What I'm calling economic nationalism is the kind of economy we had after World War II where trade was not used to dismantle labor regulation. It was not used to dismantle financial regulation.
Inside this country.
Mm-hmm. We had a lot of public investment. We had a lot of good jobs for regular people. We weren't ashamed to make things in America. I think most Americans – oh, and by the way, rich people paid their share of taxes and so did corporations. So – you know, economic nationalism, economic populism, they're lousy phrases. I would just prefer to use the phrase economic progressivism. But part of economic progressivism is that you get to regulate capitalism. And part of globalization is you don't get to regulate capitalism.
And Bannon's on board with regulating capitalism. Mm,
he sort of says he is, but you really – and I have pushed him on this in both interviews – and it's kind of squishy. You really push him on it. He knows Republicans aren't going to support real tax reform. He knows that Republicans are not going to support serious public infrastructure. I think the one area where there is some overlap, some Republicans might support getting tougher with China. But that's about it.
Lots of callers for you. Javier is calling from Miami. Javier, you're on the air with Bob Kuttner.
Hello, Tom. I wanted to make a couple of points. The first one is I'm a business person that travels all over the world, China being one of them. And indeed, we get cleaned out by the Chinese. and the idea that the Chinese somehow are communists is just ridiculous. They're more capitalist than we are here, and that's one thing, and that's why they take advantage of us. Donald Trump is right in regards to that, as is Mr. Bannon. With regards as to what their agenda is for the people here, the middle class, what is happening and what I see clearly, and I hope this for the benefit of your listeners,
okay,
this is nothing more than Latin American populism. It sounds good, it's good, but the reality is the market won't be able to deliver that. So a false dream is being sold to these people. And another point is revealed here, a complete lack of education. Just like we need an infrastructure, we need an education. Americans have been too insulated for so long from the world, and the reality is the vast majority don't know anything about the world. Take GM for an example. And that's basically what's going to happen. In the end, unfortunately, Donald Trump's going to win again. The middle class is going to get screwed. All these public works will happen. A lot of new billionaires are going to happen because of it. And America will actually regress a few years. And I don't think for a moment that Bannon is racist. He's just using race and baiting the middle class to advance an agenda, even though I do believe he has the good intention of actually fixing the Republican Party. Because my last point is this. I think most of us are born Republican, but we're made into Democrats because of how poorly they run. What a natural progression of being a good American Republican.
But Javier, you see a Latin American style populism, and what does that mean in the end? If that succeeds, if that's entrenched?
What it means is he's going to win the election once or twice, or his second in command, whoever that may be, even though being a star is a little hard. But in the end, it's a little bubble that's going to burst. And it's a nice little short-term bubble for whatever reason, the populism, how he communicates, or the little masses of people that he's getting. But these passes are significant. These people have been longly ignored.
Javier, we've got it. And that's a pretty great soliloquy. And I thank you for calling in. And Javier, who travels all over the world and sees a lot. Let me bring it to you, Bob, one more first. Kennedy in South Dakota, Rapid City, South Dakota. Hi, Kennedy. You're on the air.
I wanted to say that I think that these emotionally driven arguments carry so much weight because we don't have any good debaters in politics anymore. They seem to come to the table unprepared, and so they lose their arguments. And then I also wanted to say that it seems like Washington disproportionately serves corporations, and the next phase of tyranny that America will see will come from corporations and their power. Thank you.
Thank you, Kennedy. And one more, Bob. Artis, Delafield, Wisconsin. Artis, you are on the air.
Hi, this is Artis.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
What's happening, and first of all, I want to say congratulations to your guest for having the wisdom not necessarily to embrace or endorse his enemy, but rather to understand it, because without doing that, how are you ever supposed to get at the truth? Second of all, I'm very frightened, and I'm sure a lot of people are, at what's going on and just the level to which everything is at now. And I oftentimes feel very hopeless because that nothing's going to change, or, you know, it's not a matter of having an opposing opinion or disagreeing. It's more of a matter of basic morality and how what is considered acceptable, and just some of the things that I'm seeing going on are just terrifying.
Artists, we've got it. Bob Kuttner, there's a trio for you.
Well, if I may, I want to go back to something your first caller said about
Javier in Miami.
No, the very first caller at the beginning of the
show.
Okay,
sure.
Where is the Democratic leadership? And
if it were there, what would it be doing? What do you mean?
Well, if the problem is there's about 20 Democrats who've hinted that they might run for president. So one problem is they crowd each other out. And, you know, I would expect a real Democrat to be saying that Trump's brand of populism and Bannon's brand of populism are phonies, and here's what needs to be done for regular people. Good jobs, bring back some manufacturing. Obviously, we can't bring back the kind of manufacturing we once had. Service sector jobs that pay well, have a green transition that provides lots and lots of good jobs.
Don't they say this essentially? Isn't this essentially what they say?
Yeah, but
green jobs and real.
Yeah, but it needs to be said in a compelling way.
Well, and Steve Bannon says everything in a compelling way.
Well, this is why I issued a call yesterday for Barack Obama to get back into the fray for a couple of reasons.
He cannot be president again.
No, that's the point. That if a Democratic politician makes that speech, people are going to discount it because, oh, she's running for president or he's running for president. So Barack Obama, by definition, can't run for president again. What he can do is he can show America what a president looks like. And you might say, oh, well, that's what a black president looks like. 40% of the white working class voted for Obama. And this was a man of principle, dignity, intellect, probity. You know, you do a split screen of Obama.
And without scandal.
Well, yes. I used a fancy word for without scandal.
Mm-hmm.
You do a split screen of Barack Obama talking about this country and what America stands for, and you put it next to a split screen of Donald Trump, who comes across as the more persuasive leader. Also, Obama has been somewhat skittish to not be a lightning rod for race. No one talks about race better than Barack Obama. He does it reluctantly. He does it when he has to. But if you remember the Jeremiah Wright episode, where his former pastor gave this very inflammatory speech where he ends by saying, "God damn America."
Mm.
And this is in March of 2008, in the middle of primary season.
Yeah.
And Obama had to give the best speech of his life or it would have been over. Mm. And he did.
Threaded that incredible needle.
It was
one of the
greatest speeches ever given on the subject of race. So my argument is, you have a right to give paid lecture gigs. You've earned
past
that.
Past presidents don't usually get in the middle of things like that.
Well, that's a norm. But do you think these are normal times? They're not normal times.
No.
And you look at other Democrats who are out there. There are some good Democrats out there. But this man was a lion. This man was an extraordinary president. He didn't achieve everything he might have.
And what would the impact be? So he comes out, he starts to go public and speak up against Trump and Trump policies, but he can't run for president, so what?
It would remind people what a complete fool and fake Donald Trump is. It would remind people what dignity and principle look like. And Mr. President, we need you.
Bill in Auburn, Alabama. Bill, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. I just wanted to say that I think Bannon is a complete fraud, too. You just don't divide the country and expect the working class to have power. You know, that plays into the Wall Street, you know, the people that are against union, so to speak. It's just crazy. Would a coach do that? I mean, you know, would a coach put his children in some cream puff with small hands at wide receiver? I mean, he'd be fired. I mean, people from Alabama ought to realize that if our coaches recruited like we idiots elect our representatives, they would lose every game. You know, that's about all they understand down here is football. So try to be on their level.
But Bill, Mr. Trump said you're going to win so much you get tired of winning. But we hear you got a counterview right there. Marcia in Fort Lauderdale. Marcia, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to make the point as a student of history that I see the same theme continuously replaying itself. From the beginning of slavery in this country, when poor white farmers should have realized that slavery as an institution wasn't working for them economically, they allowed rich plantation owners and white men to convince them that this idea of white privilege is what made them better than a slave. And so they allowed that narrative to continue. And then I think back to Fred Hampton, who was the leader of the Black Panther Party in Illinois in the 60s, when he made the point that he was going to align minority groups with poor white people, and he was assassinated before he could bring that idea to fruition. I think that same narrative is now being used to keep white working class people from realizing that rich politicians and people in, you know, Wall Street are using this narrative to keep, you know, working class people down.
Marcia, we got to take it right there. My time is ticking down. Thank you so much. One more quick one. Robert in Montreal. Very quickly, Robert.
Hi, Tom. Just to say, I think Bannon and Trump have a plan since the beginning, and I hope they don't succeed. But from afar, I'm in Montreal, it looks as if Mr. Trump wants to create something nobody ever succeeded in doing in the States, is having a third party and keeping power that way. You know, it might be the Trump Nation.
Split the GOP, you go with the Trump Nation, have a third party off to the races. What do you say, Bob?
That much of a crystal ball I don't have. I mean, I don't
possible,
think
possible though.
Possible. I don't think Trump knows from one day to the next what he's going to do.
What's the Trump Bannon relationship at bottom? You've talked a lot with Bannon. You're watching this president. He's out of the White House now. What's the chemistry, the relationship between these two?
They're very similar.
Are they allies?
They're frenemies, as the saying goes. Bannon plays this very deft game where some of the time he humiliates Trump, he goads Trump, he pushes Trump to be more like Bannon's blueprint. He did that with the Alabama primary. And then sometimes he ingratiates himself with Trump, as in the comment about Corker should resign, and they talk. So
Trump banishes other people who kick him. Bannon kicks him.
Yeah, but I think Bannon has played this in a way that now – I never know whether Bannon's telling the truth. To hear Bannon tell it, they still talk. So let's assume he's telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I think Trump finds him useful. And Trump, you know, gathers this bizarre cast of characters who he finds useful. And as long as he finds Bannon useful, he'll endure some of these goads from Breitbart.
And we've just got half a minute. How far can the alt-right white supremacist race card be ridden here?
As far as Democrats will let it be ridden, if
what do
they
mean?
Don't, Democrats have to come up with something better. Democrats have to be persuasive.
In just anti-racism, but in pro...
In pro, regular people get to make a living. And if you help regular people make a living, which happened during the post-war boom, then race begins to fade.
Robert Kuttner, just out of... a second conversation with Steve Bannon. We'll see if there's a third. We'll see if there's a fourth. He is co-founder, co-editor of The American Prospect. Latest book, Debtor's Prison, The Politics of Austerity versus Possibility. In a kind of, I guess bromance is the wrong word, but it's fun to say with you. No, clearly shaking your head no. But intriguing conversation with Steve Bannon. Robert Kuttner, thanks for being with us today.
Cheers. Thanks.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.